Hey, this is Matthew cutting in right now just to explain a little bit about this conversation. I'm hoping that you're enjoying this craft series I've been doing in partnership with Kaylee Jones Books. This is the audio version, the podcast version. If you want to see a video of the conversation, you can jump over to my YouTube page. Just search up The Ink Drop with Matthew McGevna or Matthew McGevna Ink Drop. Any of those search terms in the YouTube bar will pull up my channel. Each episode that I'm doing here in this craft series focuses on a different aspect of the craft of writing, from a point of view, which we've spoken about, to writing accurate and compelling historical fiction, planning, revising, publishing, the whole nine yards. The conversation you're about to listen to is a recording of my conversation I had over Zoom with author Lori Lowenstein, who joined us to talk about writing mysteries. Lori's trajectory is actually a pretty interesting one. If you're someone who thinks in terms of genres and categories and so compartmentalizes fiction into romance and science fiction, fantasy, literary fiction, you'd be interested to know that Lori actually started out writing literary fiction with the publication of her first novel, Unmentionables, which was published by Kaylee Jones Books in 2014. I actually worked with her in a workshop. She was in a writing group with her in the Upper East Side of Manhattan while she was working in progress on Unmentionables, and the finished product really speaks for itself. If you care to check out her website, LoriLowenstein.com, and there's links to how you can get all of her books. But Unmentionables is really a work of literary fiction, and somewhere along the line, she got sucked into the world of writing mysteries, and that's after she penned the novel Death of a Rainmaker, which is a Dust Bowl-era mystery. So it's a combination of historical fiction, which we spoke about with Deirdre Sinnott, and mystery. As she was learning about mystery as she was writing it, it's a classic Dust Bowl-era whodunit, Death of a Rainmaker, and that came out in 2018. Now, most recently, in 2022, she followed up with Death of a Rainmaker with the sequel to that book, put out also by Kaylee Jones Books, a novel titled Funeral Train. And from the description of Funeral Train, quote, "Already suffering the privations of the 1930s Dust Bowl, an Oklahoma town is further devastated when a passenger train derails, flooding its hospital with the dead and maimed. Among the seriously wounded is Etha, wife of Sheriff Temple Jennings. Overwhelmed by worry for her, the sheriff must regain his footing to investigate the derailment, which rapidly develops into a case of sabotage. The following night, a local recluse is murdered. Temple has a hunch that this death is connected to the train wreck, but as he dissects the victim's life with help from the recuperating and resourceful Etha, he discovers a tangle of records that make a number of townsfolk suspects in the murder. Temple's investigations take place against the backdrop of the Great Depression, where bootlegging, petty extortion, courage, and bravado play out in equal measure." End quote. So in our conversation, Lori talks about the process of writing mysteries, the challenges, how she goes about writing a mystery. So for those of you who are working on a mystery or thinking about writing a mystery and outlining, this might be a good episode to listen to maybe get some tips. The traps one should avoid, the challenges of revising a mystery without losing key plot points, without losing a major point that the reader would have needed to know in order to be able to unravel what happens at the end. And then, of course, at the end of our conversation, she gets hit with some rapid-fire questions. So stick around to hear those. You get some interesting information about who she is as a writer. Our conversation was recorded, as I said, over Zoom. And I hope you'll find it informative and maybe even get some notes down and some inspiration for the mystery that you might be working on. Now, without any further ado, I give you Lori Lowenstein on the craft of writing mysteries. Like a Hellcat. We are here with Lori Lowenstein. She's the author of The Unmentionables, Death of a Rainmaker in 2018, and most recently Funeral Train. These are historic novels, so we thought
Historic Mysteries. So we thought you would be a great person to talk to. These novels were published with pretty great acclaim. People really were drawn to these novels. Both, I think it did a combination of attracting historical fans of historical fiction as well as mysteries as well. And we thought we'd be good to talk about mystery writing and the craft of mystery writing. So thank you for joining us. Just going to ask quickly. So, you know, right off the bat, a lot of writers are going to say, Laurie, that, you know, they have a good idea for a mystery novel, even if they don't really exclusively write mystery. So sometimes literary fiction writers will say, you know, I don't write mystery novels, but I have this really neat idea for a mystery novel. But I'm not quite sure how to break in, how to approach it. So right off the bat, I would say, what would be a good first step, some advice that you can give writers when they're approaching mystery as a genre, especially if they've never really written mystery before?
So my first book was not a mystery. So I sort of went through this process on my own. Yeah. So I would say, if you have an idea, give yourself at least a couple weeks just to play around with it and brainstorm it in your head or on paper. And just sort of let your idea emerge, and then sort of think about maybe what would be subplots within your mystery, because you know, you want to start, you usually start with like who gets killed and who did it and what were the motives, but then you need, you know, there's a lot more to a mystery than that, so you're going to have to sort of think about wider issues that you're going to address. Also, I'd advise reading mysteries. The way the mystery genre has sort of played out in recent years is there's a bunch of sort of sub-genres. So I feel like I write classical whodunits, which are sort of based in the precepts that started in the 1920s and 30s. Recently, we've had more of what we call psychological thrillers, and then also police procedurals. And then crime novels, which are usually or noir, sort of hard-boiled stuff. So, you know, you also want, as you're thinking about your potential mystery, you want to think like, well, where would mine fit in with that? And one way to find out is to read samples from all those.
Yeah, that's you can't underestimate the power of being able to read what other people have written to at least get you going, and you get a sense of the structure. So,
right.
Yeah. So obviously I've never written a mystery, but common sense would dictate, I would think, that you would nail down the details of the crime first. And I think you alluded to that in the first question, right? Like get a sense of the crime first and then kind of work backwards, like unpack backwards from there, taking away clues as you go along. Is that a good approach, or are there some things that could go wrong with that kind of approach? It's just like, let me hammer out exactly who did it and how, and then work backwards
right
from there.
Yeah, I don't know if there's right or wrong. I mean, I certainly am I do outlines and stuff, so I'm always going to fall on that. And that's really helpful to me. And then I can think about planting clues, and I can think about false suspects and that kind of thing. But the disadvantage of that, I think, is it does make sometimes the work less spontaneous. So there are certainly mystery writers who just jump in and they have, you know, and it works really well. It probably works better maybe for a psychological thriller or even a police procedural than it might for like a classic whodunit where you need all these little details planted. But I think both methods work, but you do lose something in the spontaneity.
Yeah, that's interesting. I could jump to, it makes me think of another question about the idea of exploration. Like when you map out, you know, when you map out a mystery and how it's going to work, is there room for exploration to have the characters maybe take you down paths you didn't expect to go? That happens when you write literary fiction, as you know, like with the Unmentionables. And I was fortunate enough to be in a workshop with you as you were working on Unmentionables. And so, you know, as you know, through any process in a workshop, there's always going to be some ideas that come into play, and that sometimes a character just starts doing something and you follow the character. And anytime you write.
Right.
So I guess that question is like, how, you know, what kind of room, how do you make room in when running a mystery for this character is doing something that I wasn't really planning on them doing, but their personality is taking them down that road. Let me go where this goes.
So my mysteries are, the two I wrote are set in the same small town in Western Oklahoma. It's the same two characters, a sheriff and his wife. So it's, in some ways it's an exploration of small towns, out in, it's not really the Midwest, but it's farther, you know, it's the Western area, it's the Depression. So I feel like I hope my books are character driven. I'm really interested in the characters, and so I have no problem going off on a digression. And I have the one example is I had the first book, the idea was to have the murder committed during this historic, really massive, the most massive of the dust storms in the 30s. And it becomes black in the middle of the day. And so the guy who finds the body is this blind guy who owns a theater. And I just got really involved with this guy. And he's in the second book. And so the second book, I put him in there because I thought people liked him, Chester, and I liked him. And the editors that looked at it, Johnny Temple, said, well, this doesn't really connect with the story, like the murder, you know, he wanted it really tight to the case. So what I did was in that case was instead of removing Chester, I added a way that he could intersect in tangentially with the murder case. So I don't have I like those digressions, and I don't have actually a problem. I see them in other mystery books, and that's okay with me. But whatever my editors recommend, I pretty much always do it because I feel they have a good sense. But yeah, I do like those little side stories.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I should probably amend my statement. I said I don't write mystery, but my novel that I'm shopping around right now is, it's about an investigative journalist who's kind of like uncovering two crimes actually at the same time. He's kind of investigating. And so I have a couple of those challenges. It's not a mystery per se, but a lot of those challenges where I want to take him down this path, and I'm like, does it divert from the, you know, is the reader going to read this as a mystery and be more in the crime and into uncovering? Mm-hmm. Is he going to go with the character down this like journey into his past and the regret he has over the girl he lost and, you know, that kind of thing?
I think that's, I would encourage you to just go with that, because I'm thinking also of your book Little Beasts, and that's certainly, I mean, that's not a classic whodunit, but it definitely has mysterious elements. And I just started reading the book, Dennis Lehane's newest book, Small Mercies. Mm-hmm. And it's set in the South Boston area, and I'm just like in 20 pages of it, and that, you know, it's a character study right now, a character and place study. I know that's a virtue of like someone who has a long publishing record. You know, you're going to get something from him, either whatever it might, you know, this is going to be a case. I think it says a daughter goes missing. So, so the reader is willing to go along, and the writing is so good and the characterization is so good that I don't, as a mystery reader, I know that's going to come, and I'm happy to just go along with him.
Nice. Yeah. Is a short way, I'll ask the short question first and then explain kind of where I'm coming from. But like, does finding out the culprit, let's say, of a classic whodunit early on, does that ruin the mystery? Meaning that how does the mystery writer avoid that concern? I would imagine all that fear must grip all mystery writers that people are going to find out by page, you know, 50 or 100 who committed the crime. Yeah. What are some techniques that you have used to maybe help you kind of obscure and throw the reader off a little bit? My wife reads mysteries more than I do.
Oh, good.
And yeah. And you know, she's one of these people who she has to, like, she had to find out the sex of the children too. Like, she needs to know.
Right.
The journey is not, she wants to know what it is. So she's always reading and trying to poke around, to find out who did it. That's
right.
It's like a puzzle for her rather than just go.
Yes.
So I'd imagine that's my question. Like, what would be a technique you use to try to throw off somebody like her who's really on the case?
Yes. Well, yeah. And that's, again, that's sort of what type of mystery you're writing and what your reader is expecting. And so, in like a classic whodunit kind of thing, the reader really, today's reader wants to have the characters come alive and the place come alive, but they also want a puzzle. They want to solve it. And so what stuff I kind of do is I might have multiple suspects, you know, because everyone has secrets they want to hide, you know. So if you have a couple of those floating around early on, and you don't really know what their secrets are yet, or the detective doesn't know yet, but you sense that will put people, the reader, sort of make them wonder. You can have multiple crimes going on if it's maybe a police procedural and they're investigating drug crimes and money laundering, and a different case, money laundering, and then there's a homicide. You know, and those are, they're maybe presented as separate cases, but they end up actually finding out that there's crossover, that they're connected in some way. Mm. In a different kind of book, like a thriller type, the reader, you know who the killer is pretty soon, or at least how the killer operates. You might not be named as a person, but then it becomes an issue of, well, how is the detective going, or the law enforcement, going to get him, track him down, or her down? And so in that case, it's more, how are they going to nail this person? So that's the question that the reader wants to know, rather than who did it.
Right.
So it depends. But as a reader, you know, you have to, I read a lot of mystery. So when I go to the bookstore, I pick it up and I go, well, this is a, you know, a serial killer who it's maybe told from the point of view of the serial killer, or, you know, and so I'm usually not interested in those. So I'm not going to be the reader that, but you have to meet the reader's expectations, I think, in a genre.
Mm.
They want a certain pattern.
Yeah.
Expect that.
Oh, okay. So talking a little about revision, in a mystery novel, or obviously, and I guess any plot-driven novel would be this way, one action kind of impacts the next action. And probably, you know, it's more apparent, I think, with a mystery or with a thriller, or a procedural. So I would imagine that this makes the revision process a lot more difficult or more daunting, because if you go back over, one of the challenges I find with writing is trying to keep, especially if you're writing a long novel where multiple characters, we're trying to keep everybody in order. You might go back and erase something that would have been a clue, or erase something that needs to be there in order for the crime to make any sense on a reread. So I guess the question would be, what are some like do's and don'ts when it comes to revising a work of mystery? Is there notes or multiple screens, you kind of things you need to keep in mind? You said you're an outliner, so that might help.
Yeah. So this last book, it was written during the pandemic, and so people who helped me with it at the publishing end had extra time. Mm. So I actually had four people editing that manuscript in some way, different degrees, simultaneously. Certainly, Kaylee Jones was the primary editor, and the folks at Akashic then chimed in. So I had different things going on. So you want to make sure that if you need to change up something that is going to involve a clue or point to a certain thing, that you compensate for that in some way. So maybe the clue is too obvious. It's like someone finds, like on a notepad, the police find it looks like that they can read the indentations if they color in the spaces of the notepad. You know, they can read what the notes said. So that's pretty you know, it's a cliche. So, and someone, an editor points that out, then you have to come up with a different way to have the sheriff or the policeman solve the, you know, get that clue in a different way, to get that information that clue provided in a different way. The last book too, I had the sheriff's wife who's a main character get injured pretty early on in this big train wreck, and I had a lot of information because she's sort of helps him solve some of these cases. So and she was an important character. So I had quite a bit of her not feeling, you know, like she was seriously injured and then sort of getting better and then not getting better and him worrying about her. And then she gets home and then it's sort of, and it was a lot of that sort of back and forth with her wound, was it healing or not? And pretty much everyone said that's too much stuff on her injury. So I went out and I just took it all out. I just took it out pretty much. I mean, she still gets injured. It's serious. But once it starts healing, I just let it go because it really wasn't, I felt it was adding to the relationship of the two main characters and how he reacted and things like that. But it didn't have anything to do with the case. So I took it out, you know, but that usually if I get pages of revision notes like that, I'll just go through and I'll underline all the stuff I need to do and I'll make a list and I'll just start going through that and addressing each of the concerns.
Yeah.
And then you have to go back again and make sure that all that stuff you ripped out is or changed, which you become, as you know, you start forgetting the cloth of the first draft cloth or the second draft or fifth draft. You sort of forget what was changed and what is still there. And yeah. I feel like it's like a piece of cloth that's become very tattered and patched up. And then I get to the point, I don't even know, you know, what, because I, you know, I think you have to know what you've taken out so you can patch it up, you know? So, that was hard. That was the toughest one, for me, is in revision. Because it did require a lot of adjustments.
Which book was gave you the biggest fit?
Which one? The Funeral Train.
Funeral Train. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd imagine it's almost like a butterfly effect when it comes to these, where like, you know, a cascade. You know, like they're,
yes,
if you change something at the beginning, it's going to alter. You know, it's almost like playing Back to the Future, revising. You know, like, okay.
Yes.
If I have these characters talk now, then that's going to change what happens later on. So,
yes,
I guess maybe rereading your own work would probably also be something like don't continuously reread so that you keep it all in your mind. You know?
Yeah. Yes. Cause it is hard when, you know, a novel length piece, it's like, it's hard to hold all that in your head. I mean, I know Kaylee Jones could do that. I mean, many other very accomplished writers, but I'm not there yet. It's hard to keep it all up there.
What is the internal editor in you? How do I frame this question? It's a little off. I'm just thinking, you made me think about straying away or like when you kind of prolonged and perseverated a little bit on the injury. You know, like, what does the internal editor in you tell you, like, how far away from the main line, you know, from the plot line, can you stray before you tell yourself, like, okay, I'm going off on a tangent? I mean, is it a page?
Well, that's something I'm trying to develop.
Yeah.
I don't think I had that before. I'm writing a third mystery in that series, and I'm really trying to pay attention that. I'm trying to remember all the things that I had to edit and correct in the last books that, so this book will be cleaner, but I don't know if that's, you know, when I turn it in, I don't know if that's really gonna, maybe something I missed, but I am trying to be much more cognizant of having all the scenes and all the action touch on the murder, even if it isn't clear in the beginning, which I think that's acceptable. I think, you know, the reader, it's okay if the reader is like, well, why is she writing? What's going on here? If the scene is interesting, they'll read it. But then they might be saying like, well, how's this going to hook in? But I'm really trying to make sure that it does hook in eventually in some way.
Yeah. I always, my approach to editors sometimes is to try to get past them with everything. So some writers have different approaches, you know, but you never get past them, but I try.
Yeah, I don't try.
Right, leave it alone. It's been dictated by the Holy Spirit, please.
Yes. Well, I think it's different with a literary book too. I mean, I think it's different.
That's a question too. Like, the lines seem to be blurring much more from even when I was a kid, where there was like these real lines of demarcation between like fantasy, mystery, horror, romance. Those seem to be blurring. It seems like there's an attempt, and I wonder what caused that or when that started happening, but it does seem to me like people finally woke up. Marlon James talks about this quite a bit too, like people finally starting to wake up to the idea that you know, like mystery can be literary, fantasy can be literary.
Did
you ever have that in your head, that like this isn't a literary novel, or do you try to make literary fiction novels, a literary mystery novel?
Well, I guess I hope they're literary. Certainly a goal. I think today's readers demand more than, like we talked about earlier, like just a puzzle to solve. I mean, I read a lot of the, in my I'm from a small town in Ohio, and the library had a lot of old books that, you know, they didn't have money to buy new ones, but that was fine. So I read all these mysteries from the 20s and 30s, and there was really not much characterization, and it was pretty much a puzzle, you know, locked room mystery. How did they do this? And that was fine with me. But now, as a reader of mysteries, I do like to have, I want a good, interesting character, and I want an interesting setting. And so I think the readers are more sophisticated now, and they're demanding more sophistication in their, in this, what's called genre, you know, the genre books, and their science fiction or fantasy.
Right.
They want more than just the plot pieces moving around.
Yeah. So I've heard it said that when it comes to mystery, I've heard this even about literary fiction, that when it comes to the submissions process, when it comes to sending it to an agent or an editor, that, and for the sake of the reader as well, we're talking about the reader, that the sort of that in a mystery, the dead body has to appear by page 10. Is that the case? Is that no longer the case? Was that ever? And what's the wisdom behind that? And there's a lot of questions. So what's the wisdom behind that? And should a writer, if a writer's thinking about ignoring that bit of advice, what would be what would your advice be in terms of that? Because I don't think your dead bodies appeared on page 10, but in other words, that idea.
Yeah.
That
right.
The body should hit the floor pretty early on.
Yes. And I do think the in general, readers expect that of a mystery. Mm-hmm. However, I think it's changing. First of all, it depends on who the writer is. If you've, like I said, with Dennis Lehane, for example, if you pick up a book by him, or by some of my favorite mystery writers like Ruth Rendell, you've read eight of their books, you know she's good. That person's going to deliver, and it's going to involve some kind of a homicide or a missing person or something. So I think the reader in that case is willing to just wait. Because it's, like I said, with Lehane, it's just the writing is great, the setting is amazing, the characterization. I think I'm past page 10, definitely. I'm probably in page 30, and there's no dead body yet. but I don't care. I know it's something's coming. And so that makes a difference. I think established writers can get away with that. Beginning mystery writers, I think people want the body sooner. I don't know. It's a trust relationship with the author to deliver a mystery, in my case. So, but I don't think there's any, as long as there's tension in the beginning and maybe a little foreshadowing that something not good is on the horizon, I think the reader will stick with you past the 10 pages at least.
Right.
But you want to have, I mean, you don't want to go halfway through and just have the, you know, that's not going to work for a mystery reader.
Yeah, the reader will go past 10 pages. Better luck with the agent.
Well, that's true. Yes, that is true. That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
For that's the first door you have to cross. And yeah, they're because they're thinking, can I sell this?
Yeah, of course, right. And yeah, the expect, as you said, they're reacting also to the expectation of the reader, I would think.
Yes.
What are some, can you think offhand, I don't want to put you on the spot, but can you think offhand, what are some cliches that, you know, of mystery writing that maybe people would want to avoid? You know, I always appreciate hearing cliches because I probably fall victim to them a lot, you know, when I write. One of the things I did always appreciate about workshops is hearing different people say, like, oh, please don't show, like, don't, please don't write the overly emotional Italian woman, right?
Yes, yes.
So, which I wouldn't have thought about. I would have gone with the emotionally, overly emotional.
Right. Oh, yeah.
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 So what are some of those cliches that right off the bat you could tell a person who's just sitting down and outlining a mystery right now, like, don't do this, don't avoid that.
Right? Yeah, I guess I would say, cliches to avoid would be things like, you know, the types of clues, like I mentioned, how they discover them. You don't want to have, well, it's more of a don't do it. The notepad with the indentations from the previous writing, or I can't think of any.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, no, it's
sorry.
When you
I know,
you know, when you see them, right? Like,
just, yes, exactly. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I always think about like the divorced alcoholic investigator, you know.
Well, yeah, okay. Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, one thing I try and avoid, it's hard. I wanted to, when I started writing these mysteries, I really wanted to have a husband and wife involved together in solving the case in some way. And women in the 30s, they were some women sheriffs, but not a lot. And so it's been really tricky to find ways to, get her helping to solve the case without having her look like a going on her into woman's intuition or being a real Budinsky and keeping pushing him for, well, what, you know, what are you doing? Well, this is what I think. So, and those are cliches, I think, of women in mysteries, who are not amateur sleuths. I mean, I guess the woman is often an amateur sleuth, but in my case, she's working with a sheriff, you know, so avoiding the cliche of them working together and not have her just look like someone who is horning in on the case. It has really nothing to add.
Yeah. I can imagine that. I'm trying to think of how I was going to, when it comes to the, oh, I lost my train of thought. Yeah. I was just thinking about it. Yeah. That's, oh, that's what I wanted to ask you. Yeah, sorry. Was that it seems like your novels in particular, your mystery novels also have this sort of underlying social message to it. Is that just something that you enjoy doing, or do you think that just kind of emerges from the process of writing historical mysteries?
Well, for me, it just sort of emerges somewhat organically. I usually don't like to go into a book with like a message, but I am interested in, I want a strong woman character. And I like, you know, that I like writing in the in historical eras. So often the women did not, first book was set in 1917 before they even had the right to vote. And this is the 30s. So the women did have reduced roles in those times. So I have to find ways to bring them forward with regardless. So so that takes me into those areas, I think, those sort of
yeah, you can't
sociological.
Help. Yeah, you can't help but run right into some of those inequity issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
But so, and that's important. You know, that's important to me to have a strong woman character. It's important to me to present what's going on in the small towns as well. If, coming from a small town, I think that in the middle of the country, I think it's that's an area that I don't think is represented very much in literary fiction or mysteries as a whole lot. So that's important to me.
That's great. Thank you. You want to do some rapid fire questions? We're going to run out.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm up for it.
I'll just ask them to you and then you give them out. I won't
Okay.
The commentary. You ready to go?
Okay.
All right. This is my first time I'm going to ask somebody this question. What bad writing habit did you have to unlearn?
I had to unlearn my bad writing habit was like not letting my characters express their anger and their inner turmoil. My writing was because it was too quiet.
What's the best piece of writing advice you ever got?
Just keep at it. Keep writing daily.
What's the worst piece of writing advice you ever got?
Keeping a journal. I mean, I know that's not for everybody, but for me, that just does not work. I mean, a lot of people advocate that, but that doesn't do it for me. And I feel like I write something in journal, and then if I have five journals lined up on my shelf, I can't locate the piece that I want to find. That doesn't do it.
What genre do you have no interest in writing?
Romance.
Second writer to say that. Romance, good. The biggest killer of your writing time?
Oh, well, we're living down here in this, near the beach. We have, traveling to go see adult children and also having guests come here.
What is one item on your bucket list?
I'd like to write a murder series on set in similar to the town I grew up in, which in Western Ohio, and it's a rural area. The town has factories, and in the 50s, the factories were expanding, and they recruited a lot of folks from Appalachia, from Tennessee and Kentucky to come up and work. And there was a movement, which I've researched a bit about these folks moving, mostly white farming folks moving north in the 50s and 60s for jobs. Mm. And that, so when I moved to this town in junior high, I noticed quickly these cultural differences between the people who've been there generations and this newer group of folks, and I'd like to set a mystery in that and examine that.
Libraries or coffee shops?
Oh, libraries.
Oh, I'm a coffee shop person. I'm not supposed to editorialize, but
that's okay.
And then finally, what's the one thing about the publishing world, the publishing industry, that we're not talking about but we should be?
Well, now it's AI. That's going to be a big thing. But I guess just from personal, I'm speaking from my personal experience, I think writers entering the industry need to know that it is very difficult to get published. And that once you're published, that doesn't mean that you're going to sell many books at all, depending on, you know, what your book is and who publishes it. But it's very possible to go with a smaller press, and they do a great job and you sell books, but you're not, I think you need to know you're not going to, can't give up your day job.
Good.
Yeah.
Laura Lowenstein, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure. Really good. Like a Hellcat.